All right, good morning, everyone. So we're continuing this week with Kapitel Nunhei, chapter 55 in Tehillim. So let's begin just by taking a look at the first couple of psukim. We're not going to go too far into this particular kapitel, but we'll at least get the general thematic overview. L'amnatzeach b'neginos maskil l'david. So already, again, there's an incredible amount of profundity just packed into this first pasuk. So l'amnatzeach, of course, we know, again, into the conductor, David HaMelech telling us that this is one of the kapitlach to be sung by the Levitic choir, b'neginos. Now we'll leave that word for a little bit later on, maskil l'david. So remember, again, based on our shurim from the last couple of weeks, whenever we see maskil, what do we know? That there's a life-altering lesson. Excellent. From Lashon of Seichel. David HaMelech is telling us that what I'm about to teach you in here is not just important, is not just meaningful, is not just profound, but has the ability to be cathartically life-altering. There's a lesson that is contained here that David HaMelech says is necessary for impactful, profound living. And then David HaMelech goes on. Ha'azina Elokim tefilasi. Ribono shel olam, hearken or listen to my tefila. V'al tisalam mitchinasi. Do not turn away. Do not disregard my supplication. Hakshiva li va'aneni. Listen to me and answer me. Arid b'sichi va'ahima. I lament in my speech and I moan. He goes on. Mikola yev mipnei akas rasha. Kiamit alai oven uba'af yistimuni. And once again, David HaMelech says, from the voice of the enemy, because of the distress of the wicked, for they accuse me of iniquity, and they hate me with a vengeance. So as one could imagine, again, the theme of this particular capital, once again, is the theme of betrayal. David HaMelech discussing the idea that there are people who I trusted, there are people who I looked to, there are people who I thought I had relationships with, and yet, again, they betrayed me. He goes on, Libi yachil, I'm in the pasuk. Hey, just one more pasuk. Libi yachil bikirbi ve'emos maves naflu ala yira varaad yavobi vatechasini palatos. My heart shudders within me. The terrors of death have fallen upon me. Fear and trembling come upon me, and horror overcomes me. And again, David HaMelech then goes on to discuss an incredibly profound metaphor, how he feels like he's under siege by his enemies. He feels ultimately, again, that there are those who are just encircling him, and the circle grows closer and closer, I should say, smaller and smaller, to the point that he feels trapped, to the point that he feels suffocated. And David HaMelech gives an incredible verbal expression to these feelings of pain, feelings of anxiety. This particular theme of betrayal, this particular theme of David HaMelech ultimately, again, feeling like the rug has been pulled out from under him, from people who he loved, people who he trusted, is a theme that we have studied many times throughout Sefer Tehillim. Although David HaMelech goes ahead and repeats, meaning it's not uncommon in Sefer Tehillim for a particular theme to be repeated over and over and over. However, even when David HaMelech repeats the same theme, very often it's linked to some particular circumstance. So remember again, it must be in the previous capital. Yes. I have 50 minutes still, right? Baruch Hashem. Good. We're going to get to it. That's exactly what we'll discuss. So understand over here, but David HaMelech, for example, in the previous capital, we spoke about Bevo HaZifim. David HaMelech was speaking about betrayal. That act of betrayal was linked to the people of Zif. When David HaMelech was finding refuge, finding refuge in the city of Zif, told the people promised him they won't disclose to Shaul about his whereabouts, and then they go ahead and they disclose the whereabouts. So every time David HaMelech speaks about betrayal, usually it's because of another act or another event of betrayal which has occurred. So what's happening in this particular capital? To which betrayal is David HaMelech discussing? Which betrayal is he alluding to? So if you look at number two, the Radak says, L'amnatzeach b'negidos maskil l'David, zeh ha-mizmor, Amru David, Kishebarach Mirshalayim, Mipnei Avshalom. So the Radak says two things here. Number one, that this particular kapitel was sung by David HaMelech when he ran away from Avshalom. So remember again, to give a little bit of context, in the aftermath of the episode with Bathsheba, Nasan HaNavi tells David that there are going to be a number of ripple effects that will occur as a result of what occurred with Bathsheba. Number one, that the baby they had together, the first child, was going to die. Number two, that David HaMelech would be stricken with illness. And number three, that there would be a rebellion from within his household. David HaMelech therefore lives his entire life knowing that the day will come when someone from within his own household, who it would be he did not know, would launch a rebellion. It turns out to be David's son Avshalom. And Avshalom launches a vicious rebellion against his father. In an effort to unseat his father, David HaMelech will not fight against his son. He will sooner abdicate the throne than raise a hand against his son. And so when Avshalom comes into Yerushalayim, marches on Yerushalayim, takes over the palace, takes over the kingdom, David leaves. David decides to flee. So the Radak says that this particular kapitel about deceit and about backstabbing and about those who are close to him undermining him, so the Radak says, was a reaction to the episode of the rebellion of Avshalom. But here's the problem. The problem is, we have other kapitlach that are explicitly devoted to the rebellion of Avshalom. We have kapitlach like that already, where David HaMelech names Avshalom by name. So what's going on over here? It says that the Radak adds on one more piece. V'ne'emar lo, ki achitofel bekoshrin. David HaMelech already spent his time lamenting the fact that his own son, his own flesh and blood, rose up against him. He already went ahead and devoted kapitlach to the Rebbein of Shalom. Here he's lamenting another act of deceitful backstabbing. Here he's going ahead and lamenting another part or another piece of interpersonal transgression, and that was the defection of Achitofel. Achitofel was David HaMelech's most trusted advisor, and we'll discuss the origins of this relationship. And Achitofel, when Avshalom goes ahead and Avshalom decides to rebel, Achitofel defects. Why does Achitofel defect? That's a whole other discussion in and of itself. So the Radak understands that what David HaMelech here speaks about, the deceitful nature of human relationships, the idea that you could love someone, you could trust someone, and they could turn around and stab you in the back, he's not just referring to Avshalom. We already spoke about Avshalom. He's referring to the defection of Achitofel. Take a look at number three. The Malbim says the same basic idea. Lam Natseach, he says, Husad, so the Malbim writes over here that this Lam Natseach, this particular kapitel, was ultimately also coined when David HaMelech ran away from Avshalom. Ukvar shar alzeh lemala simen gimel. So remember again, David HaMelech already spoke about this in the third chapter of Tehillim. Upo diber biyichud mimapalos achitofel v'sofo. Says the Malbim, what David HaMelech is really lamenting over here, what he's really crying about, what he's really speaking about is Achitofel. Achitofel, you are my right hand man. Achitofel, you are my most trusted advisor. Achitofel, you are part of the inner circle, and you went ahead and you decided to defect. Take a look at number four. So interestingly enough, he says over here, so let's take a step back. So now we know thematically, although the general kapitel speaks about backstabbing, speaks out the inability to trust evil, speaks about the idea that sometimes even those who you love or those who are closest to you undermine you, rebel against you, unfortunately undermine the sanctity of the relationship. So now we know it's talking about Achitofel. We'll come back to Achitofel in just, actually, all right, we'll come back to Achitofel in just a second. We'll loop back to it. What's also dramatic about this kapitel, as was mentioned before, Lam Natseach, this is a song. Not only is it a song, but the pasuk uses lashon of neginos. What does neginos mean? So the Al Shechid number 4 says the following: Lam natzech bi neginos maskila David merov sicho al yegono hamakne atzvus hutzrach kli nigun biyoser laorer simcha lachol ruach hakodesh. So the Al Shech points out neginos means an instrument. Neginos means an instrument. So not only is David HaMelech going ahead and singing this kapitel, but he's singing it together with a neginos, with an instrument. Why is there an instrument necessary over here in this kapitel, says the Al-Sheikh? You know, there's a very important yisod, which is, Ein ha-shechina shora ela mitoch simcha. One could only go ahead and experience the shechina, the divine presence, in a state of joy, in a state of simcha. If one is not in a state of simcha, then ultimately, again, one cannot experience a closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is an incredibly important, so this is why, for example, on Tisha B'Av, interesting idea, Tisha B'Av, of course, is a fast day. Normally on fast days, we have Slichos. Normally on fast days, you say Avinu Malkeinu. Normally on fast days, you say Tachanu, which are all supplicatory prayers. Yet, amazingly enough, none of that appears on Tisha B'Av. Why? Because Tisha B'Av is a day where there is no Simcha. There is no Simcha. Where there is no Simcha, my ability to connect with God is fundamentally handicapped, is fundamentally limited. So the Al-Sheikh says over here, David HaMelech wants to sing a song to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. David HaMelech wants to enter into a state of nevuah, a state of prophecy. The problem is he can't. Why can't he? Because this particular episode of Achitofel is so painful, is so difficult, brings up so many negative emotions with David. Therefore, how does he begin the kapitel? Lam natseach. In order for me to be able to sing about this, beneginos. I needed an instrument. I needed something to be able to allow me to experience simcha, so as to allow myself to be able to experience nevuah, to be able to write these words. Kli nigun biyosel or simcha, lochu ruach hakodesh v'zehu, lam natseach beneginos, kidei shetachol maskil l'david. So therefore, if you go back to number one, to the first pasuk, so according to the Al-Sheikh, this pasuk is read in a dramatically different way. Lam natseach. David HaMelech is saying is this is a song, but I'm going to be honest with you. I could not sing in this period of my life. I couldn't sing because what I experienced was so painful. What I experienced was so dramatic. Therefore, again, how did I bring myself to a state of simcha? Beneginos, literally with music. With music, music has the ability to influence a person in all types of dramatic ways. So beneginos, I brought the instrument, maskil David. And that's how I was able to come into the prophetic trance. That's how I was able to come into a state of Ruach HaKodesh. That's how I was able to bring myself together, maskil David, in order to be able to convey this dramatic lesson. So what we see over here unfolding is something exceptionally dramatic, which is David HaMelech has experienced many episodes of betrayal throughout his life, but yet, again, there is something about this Achitofel betrayal that ultimately throws David HaMelech, you know, sometimes a person, after they've been hurt, or after they've experienced pain, so thinks that they've experienced all the pain there is to be experienced. I've felt it all. And you believe that until when? Until the next thing happens, right? And then it's amazing to see how I thought this was the worst thing possible, and now there's something else there's something else that could be even worse. There's something else that could even be more traumatic than this. So David HaMelech has spoken and sung about many times about his pain, and every time he thinks that this is the worst it could be, until the next thing happens, then he realizes there is worse pain out there. There is more dramatic pain out there. I haven't felt the pinnacle of pain because, unfortunately, there is no end to the amount of pain a person could suffer in the spectrum of the human condition. Why was the betrayal of Achitofel so dramatic and traumatic for David? So take a look at number five. So there's an amazing Gemara Maseches Makis. We actually had this in Daf Yomi just a few days ago. Achitofel was by David HaMelech's side from the beginning. From the beginning. So the Gemara tells a dramatic story here. Shebisha Shekara David Shisin Kafa Tahoma. David HaMelech, as we've spoken about many times throughout our journeys through Tehillim, wanted more than anything to be able to build the Beis HaMikdash. But he was unable to do so. God told him he was not allowed to do so. So David HaMelech pretty much does anything and everything but build the Beis HaMikdash. He purchases the land. He goes ahead and he arranges the beautiful music for the Levitic choir. And in fact, the Gemara says, he dug the foundation for the Beis HaMikdash. He literally dug the foundation for the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara discusses over here that when he dug the foundation, he dug a bit too deep until he reached the waters of the Tahom. Now, without getting into this too much, but understand something. When we were introduced to the world in the beginning of Bereshis, what does the Torah tell us? What was the world covered with? Water, right? There's water everywhere. So here's the problem. What does the Kadosh Baruch Hu do with the waters? Right? So he recedes, right? He contracts them into the seas, into the oceans. The problem is, if the entire world is filled with water, and then he goes ahead and contracts them into the seas, what happened to the rest of the water? So again, some of it is separated above. A lot of it is brought into subterranean areas. So a lot of it is brought to what's called the Tahom. The Tahom represents the depths where there are some of these original, what we'll call creation waters, were brought down into the depths of the world. So whatever this means, David HaMelech is digging the foundation for the Beis HaMikdash. He digs a bit too deep, and the Tahom, the subterranean waters threaten to bubble up and to submerge the world in their waters. So what happens? Amar, so again, there's a lot of metaphorical meaning in this Gemara, which we're not going to get into now. I'm highlighting it for you because of the relationship component. Amar, mahu lichtov shem achaspa, umishta betahoma deleko aduchte. Sama has a halachic shayla. What's the halachic shayla? Can I write the ineffable name of God on a piece of clay, throw it into the waters in order to get the waters to stop? What's David HaMelech's question? His question is, if I write the piece of a name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a piece of clay and I throw it into the water, what could happen? It could get erased. And one is not permitted to erase, especially the ineffable name of God. So what happens? No one kind of wants to answer. No one wants to answer this question. Finally, what happens? Nasa, look at the third line down in number 5. Nasa Achitofel Kavachomer Biatzmo. Achitofel makes the Kavachomer. What's the Kavachomer? Omer. Umalaso Shalom bin Ishli Ishto Amra Torah. Shmi Shenichtov Bikidusha Yimacha Alamayim. Lechala Olam Kulo Lokoshikin. So Achitofel makes an interesting Kavachomer. He brings a Kavachomer from the episode of Sota. Sota is a woman who's suspected of adultery. What happens? Her husband brings her to the Beis HaMikdash. They write the parsha of Sota on a piece of parchment. They erase it in water. She drinks the water. If she's innocent, the waters act as waters of bracha for her. And if she's not, the waters serve as a death sentence. Achitofel says, if God allows his name to be erased for the sake of affecting shalom within one couple, then of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not mind if his name is erased in order to save the entire world. So go Amar Lei, Achitofel says to David HaMelech, Shari, it's permitted. Kasa Shema Chaspa, so Darumach writes the name of God on a piece of clay. Shadi Atomi throws it into the Tahom. Nachas Vekamaduchti, and the waters again receded downwards. Why is this story important? Because it tells us two things about the Achitofel David relationship. Number one, Achitofel is by David's side as he takes every single step. Number two, Achitofel wasn't just an advisor. Achitofel was a Rebbe to David HaMelech as well. So David HaMelech is not simply betrayed by an advisor. He's not simply betrayed by a friend. He is betrayed by a Rebbe. And again, remember, for David HaMelech, who did not have a positive relationship and association with a father figure, for David HaMelech, again, who was also mistreated in an emotional way by his own father. So here he finally has a Rebbe who he thought loved him, who he thought cared about him, and yet, again, the Rebbe defects to the side of the rebellious son. Now, just so you understand how the Achitofel story ends, the way the Achitofel story ends is Avshalom chases David out of Yerushalayim. Achitofel begs Avshalom, pursue your father now. Mobilize the army now. Because if you give David time to regroup, he will defeat you. Pursue him now. He's on the run. Achitofel has his own buddies, his own guys, who are totally inexperienced, who are advising him. And his advisors say, no, let's take a break. Let's relax. Let's celebrate the victory. We have the palace. Let's enjoy ourselves a little bit. David HaMelech is running. He's a man without an army. He can't defeat us. We'll go after him tomorrow. Achitofel begs and pleads. Avshalom will not listen. Achitofel realized that in that moment, when Avshalom doesn't take the advantage he has to pursue David, so Achitofel realizes that the rebellion is doomed. What does Achitofel do? Achitofel, the Navi says, gets on his donkey, goes back home, gives last will and testament to his family, and hangs himself. He takes his own life. He takes his own life because he realizes that the rebellion is... Now, the reason, by the way, just you understand why he does that dramatic activity. Achitofel knew David was going to come back to power. He realized David was going to come back to power. If David come back to power, what would happen to Achitofel? Achitofel would be executed as a traitor. The halacha is that when you are executed as a morid b'malchus, the monarchy takes your estate. Achitofel did something terrible. He wanted to make sure that his family would not continue to suffer for his mistake. That's what it means when it says he was mitzaves beso. He gave over his property to his family. He hangs himself, taking his own life, but ensuring that his family is able to hold on to the estate. It's a tragic, tragic story on many different levels. That is the Achitofel narrative. David HaMelech, so therefore, again, to bring this back into perspective, the betrayal of Achitofel was not just another human betrayal. There's no shortage of those for David HaMelech. The betrayal of Achitofel was a Rebbe, was a father figure who David thought loved him, cared about him and was his partner in this endeavor of building Klal Yisrael from the beginning. And when that betrayal occurs, David HaMelech is so profoundly broken. So Lam Natzeach Beneginos Maskil David. And again, David HaMelech says, there's a profound lesson though I learned from this betrayal. There's a profound lesson. We're going to discuss what that profound lesson is. There's a profound lesson. But I want you to understand that I was so broken. I was so broken by this entire event that I couldn't self-inspire. I couldn't self-inspire. Instead, Benegino, says the Al-Sheikh, I needed the music to lift me up. I needed the Negino to lift me up to the state where I could compose this capital. But perhaps there's something deeper that's unfolding over here. Meaning, we'll see the maskil, the real lesson of David HaMelech, is contained later on in the capital. We're going to study this capital for the next couple of weeks. But there's already a dramatic lesson that is contained within the first pasuk of this capital. This Lam Natzeach Beneginos Maskil David. Even before David HaMelech gives us the contents of Psukim, Beis through Chavdalid, David HaMelech teaches us a profound life lesson. The Maskil, I think, is contained even in the first pasuk. But to appreciate it, we're going to go on a little bit of a detour. So just, you know, there's always incredible Hashgacha Pratis in everything. It happens to be, I'm not giving my Parsha Shir tonight. So it just happened to be that, amazingly enough, there's an insight from this week's parsha that I think fits to this particular capital. So the Ribono Shalom is looking out for me, obviously, to be able to combine both of these shirim a little bit into one. So take a look. So we're going to go on a little bit of a detour from the parsha, and then we're going to loop it back into Tehillim. So if you look at number 6, opening parsha, opening pasuk of this week's parsha, a little bit of context. Remember again, last week, parsha's told us a very dramatic parsha, where again, we have the whole episode of the Bechorah, the whole episode of Yaakov and Esav, each of them trying to angle for the brachos. Yaakov is successful, but with incredible collateral damage. What's the incredible collateral damage? The family effectively is torn apart. Esav is ready to kill his brother. Rivka knows that Esav wants to kill, so Rivka says, go. Yaakov Avinu decides, again, Yitzchak sends him, go find the wife in Haran, fine. So the pasuk begins in number 6. Parsha begins in number 6. Vayeti Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, vayelech Harana. Yaakov Avinu leaves Be'er Sheva, he left Be'er Sheva, and he goes to Haran. So the question that the Mefarshim all pick up on is the following. The pasuk seems to be unnecessary and repetitive. Why? Because if you look at number 7, which is the end of last week's parsha, so the Torah says, Vayishlach Yitzchak es Yaakov, Vayelech Padena Aram Elavan ben Besuala Arami Achi Rivka, Eim Yaakov ve'esav. So what happens? The Torah already told us in last week's parsha that Yitzchak sent Yaakov, and Yaakov already went to Padan Aram. Meaning, we already know this piece of information. It's already told us that Yaakov Avinu left the familial home in an effort to go to the house of Lavan in order to be able to find a wife. So if the Torah, and again, you can see, number 7 is Perek Chaf Ches, Pasuk He. So chapter 28, verse 5. Number 6 is chapter 28, verse 10. So why does the Torah once again need to say, Vayetse Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, Vayelech Harana? Why the need to tell us again that Yaakov Avinu has left the familial home in Be'er Sheva in an effort to go to Haran? So the Mefarshim give many, many, many different answers to this. So the simplest answer, which is Rashi in number 8, the simplest answer is, Vayetse Yaakov, if you skip to the end of the first line, Hifsika inyan beparashasal shal Yaakov, v'ksiv, v'ayar Esav kibirach, u'mishagamar chazal inyan arisham. So Rashi says something very simple. But Rashi says, there's an interruption in the narrative. That's what happens. Meaning, the Torah says in last week's parasha that Yaakov Avinu sent, that yes, Yaakov sent Yaakov to Haran to find a wife. But remember again, that's not how Parashas Toldos ends. How does Parashas Toldos end? Parashas Toldos ends with Esav's shidduch. That who does Esav marry? Esav marries Machalas Bas Yishmael. He ends up marrying again his cousin, right? Of Machalas, the daughter of Yishmael. So since the Torah interrupted the Yaakov Avinu narrative, so the Torah resumes it. So Rashi just says this is a stylistic issue. When the Torah starts a story, interrupts the story, which often happens, the Torah then tries to resume the narrative by kind of resetting the narrative and beginning it again. So the Torah began the narrative of Yaakov Avinu leaving the familial home in Be'er Sheva, going to Haran. Torah then interrupted that narrative by telling us about the marriage of Esav. So in this sixth parasha, the Torah just once again resumes the narrative. Just to kind of, you know, in last week's program, right? So we go ahead, we just simply reset and resume that. Vayetzi Yaakov Be'er Sheva is just the Torah resuming the narrative from the beginning. Okay, quite beautiful. The Beis Halevi in number 10 has a different approach. The Beis Halevi writes, number 10, Od yesh lomar, debechol odam yotze mimakom lamakom, yesh baze ofanim. Od deikar tachli sohia yotze mimakom arishon, mishum eza siba, va'al kein muchrachu leilech lamakom acher, aval ikar kavanosu uritzono, hi ha yotzea. O mishum, de tzarech lios bimakom asheni, Vizehu Iker Tachlis Kavanosa Bahalicha. So listen to this. The Beis Halevi says something dramatically amazing. He says that in life there are two different types of journeys. Sometimes I'm journeying from something, sometimes I'm journeying to something. Sometimes the goal is the destination. Sometimes the goal is just to get away from where I am. So the Beis Halevi says something amazing. He says, "Ubi Yaakov nislachtu shtei kavanos." Yaakov's journey represented both of these facets. How so? Deikar kavanoso balichaso lekayim mitzvas kibod avein. Derivka amra lo hine Esav achicha misnachem locha largecha ve'ata kum berach locha el lavan. So this is amazing. The Beis Halevi makes an amazing observation. Yitzchak and Rivka both tell Yaakov to leave Be'er Sheva and to go to Haran. So they both tell him to go. But wherein lies the distinction between their commands, right? Wherein lies the distinction? The distinction ultimately is the motivation. Rivka tells Yaakov to leave. Why? Why? To save his life. So according to Rivka, the ikar, the most important thing for Yaakov Avinu is to get out of Be'er Sheva. But again, I don't just want to tell my kid to get out. So I'm going to tell him where to go. Go to Lavan. Go to Lavan. And you know, while you're there, find yourself a wife. You know what I mean? But the goal ultimately is, Yaakov, you need to leave here. You need to leave the house because Esav is getting ready to kill you and I can't protect you. I can't protect you against Esav. So the goal is safety. The goal is refuge. I'm telling you to go to my mishpacha. But the goal is for you to leave the home. Find safety and refuge with your uncle, with my brother. And by the way, while you're there, find the spouse. Yitzchak, on the other hand, gives his son a dramatically different command. Now, Yitzchak tells Yaakov to leave. Why? To find a wife. So the motivation for Yitzchak's command to Yaakov is, I need you, Davka, I want you to go. Now, I want you to go to Lavan, because the goal is the destination. I need you ultimately to go and find a wife by Lavan. Now, why the distinction between the commands? It could very well be that Yitzchak was simply unaware that Esav was ready to kill Yaakov. He probably just, again, it seems to be the dynamic within the house of Yitzchak and Rivka. Rivka, like most mothers, seems to have their ear to the ground a little bit more with their children. Yitzchak, the father, pretty much knows what he knows, but doesn't really know what the unfamiliar undercurrents are. So therefore, Yitzchak tells Yaakov to leave. But he tells him to leave because I want you to go find a wife by Lavan. So the Beis Halevi says something amazing. Yitzchak Avinu is trying to be Mekayim, is trying to ultimately be Mechabit, he's trying to honor both of his parents, his father and his mother. He's trying to honor both of their requests, which interestingly enough, although they sound the same, are dramatically different as we're going to see. So what happens? Rivka tells Yaakov, the Rivka Amrlo, I'm in number 10, I'm in number 10, a few lines in. But Rivka, the Rivka Amrlo, Hine Esav Achicha Mistachem La'agecha. Rivka tells Yaakov, your brother wants to kill you, therefore, Ato, Kum Barach Elavan, go. Dikra Kavana, Hayashlo Yiya Beber Shava Makum Sha'isav Sham, Va'ikr Bazel Hu Hayitzia. When Rivka gives Yaakov the command to leave, the goal is get out. The goal is run away. The truth is, I don't really care where you go, but because I'm your mother, I want you to go to somewhere where I could trust a little bit, somewhere that I feel that there's a certain element of safety. Go to my brother, go to Lavan. So from Rivka's perspective, the goal was get out of Be'er Sheva. The goal is flight. The goal is to run away. For Yitzchak, the goal is to take flight from where you are right now. For Yitzchak, the goal is not flight. What's the goal? The goal is the destination of Lavan's home. Go and find the wife. The Yaakov kiyem divrei shnehem shua yitzia v'gam ha'alicha l'charan u'shnehem haya etzlo le'ikar v'tachlis v'zeh she'amar ha'kosov b'parasha shalama v'yishma Yaakov el aviv v'imo v'yelech padena aram sheneskabim l'kaim divrei shnehem. So amazing enough, says the Beis Halevi, a beautiful insight. Therefore, the psukim ultimately again are not repetitive. In last week's parsha, which is number 7 on your sheet, Vayishlach Yaakov Yitzchak es Yaakov Vayelech Padena Aram. That was Yitzchak Avinu going ahead and honoring his father by having in mind to go to Padena Aram as a destination. In this week's parsha, Vayetze Yaakov Meber Sheva. The goal is what? The goal is what? Flight. To honor the request of Rivka Imenu. So according to the Beis Halevi, this entire repetition is to teach us the greatness of Yaakov Avinu. That Yaakov is trying to balance, the sensitivities of both parents. You know, sometimes...
He didn't know what was going on?
It sounds like not. And Pasha Pshat in the Psukim is the same way that Yitzchak didn't know or didn't want to know who Esav really was. Right? So he doesn't really know what's happening here as well. And again, the dynamic, just so you should know, I mentioned this in the Parsha Shir last week, the dynamic of Yitzchak and Rivka is a dramatically different dynamic of Avraham and Sarah. Avraham and Sarah, which by the way is interesting how each of the Avos and Imos have dramatically different marriage models. Right? Avraham and Sarah are partners. They're partners through and through. What's the proof to that? The greatest proof to that is, what do we know about Avraham Avinu once Sarah Imenu dies? Nothing. Pretty much, what does Avraham Avinu do after Sarah dies? He purchases Ma'aseh Machpelah. He marries off Yitzchak. And again, he himself gets remarried. There is no dynamic Abrahamic activity after the death of Sarah. Because Avraham Avinu is only Avraham Avinu with a Sarah by his side. If there's not a Sarah, there's not an Avram. That's dramatically different than Yitzchak and Rivka. What's the first thing that Rivka does when we're first introduced? The first time Yitzchak and Rivka, their first date, so to speak. The first time Rivka and Yitzchak meet. What does Rivka do? Now remember again, the Lashon of the Pasuk is Vatipa Malga, she fell off the camel. So I want to be clear. It's not the fact that she was like love struck. Oh, right? It was so, he swept me off my camel. Right? That's not what the Torah is saying. Right? Vatipo me'al hagomo means she prostrated herself. She got off her camel and she bowed down. Rivka sees Yitzchak as the spiritually superior one. Yitzchak, and again, there was also a dramatic age difference between them. Yitzchak and Rivka's relationship was dramatically different. So the first time she meets him, she doesn't meet him as an equal. She doesn't meet him as a peer. She does not meet him as a partner. She meets him in a way where she prostrates herself before him. That was the dynamic. And that's why, again, so much of their relationship doesn't have the give and take. You know, by Avram and Sarah, when something's going wrong in the house, what happens? Sarah tells Avram the way it's going to be. And when Avram Avinu says, I don't know if that's such a good idea, the Ribono Shel Olam himself intervenes and says, Kol ma she'tomer eilecha Sarah shma bekola. There is a synergistic partnership. When stuff is going wrong in Yitzchak and Rivka's house, now we don't know, the Torah is not a storybook. Did they have conversations? Did Rivka speak to Yitzchak about this? Did she not speak about Yitzchak about it? So we don't know. The Mefarshim go in many different directions in trying to understand that. We don't know exactly what it is that occurred. But at the end of the day, it is clear that the relationship is fundamentally different. Fundamentally different. So what he did know, what he didn't know, we don't know. But the point that Beis Halevi is making over here is that Yaakov Avinu, again, sometimes the greatest challenges in Kibbutz Av Va'Em are when father and mother want or need two dramatically different things. And the child often is in the middle trying to figure out how to go ahead and be the best child to both parents. What happens in this particular situation, Yaakov Avinu is being told at the end of the day the same thing by both parents, which is, get out of Be'er Sheva and go to Haran, but amazingly enough, for two dramatically different purposes and in two dramatically different ways. His mother is telling him, please, you have to leave the house to save your life. The goal is the flight. According to Yitzchak Avinu, the goal is the destination. Torah Kedosha telling us, sensitizing us, to Yaakov Avinu, try to be good in his kibbutz avim, trying to make both parents happy. Not in a behavioral way, because the behavioral action, the physical action was the same, which was to leave the home, go to Lavan. But with his kavanas, he's trying to have both the kavana of flight, leaving the home, Rivka's desire, as well as the kavana of arriving in the destination, Yaakov's desire. But now come and take a look at number 11. Says the Kli Yakar, something absolutely amazing. And by the way, I just want to point out, just so you understand how incredible, we have such a dramatically beautiful Torah. How we could give a whole shiur, and by the way, I'm giving you the tip of the iceberg on two words, Vayetzi Yaakov. Vayetzi Yaakov. It's not even like the most dramatic part of the parasha. Vayetzi Yaakov. Look what the Kli Yakar says, number 11. Vayetzi Yaakov vayelech miboyle. So the Kli Yakar says, the Kli Yakar comes to this a little bit differently. The Kli Yakar says, it should have just said, meaning, the Torah doesn't use extra words. So the Torah could have just said, Vayelech Yaakov Charana. Meaning, obviously, if the Torah tells you that Yaakov Avinu went to Haran, what does that by definition presuppose? That he left Be'er Sheva. I don't need both of these things. I don't need to be told that Yaakov left Be'er Sheva and he went to Haran. Now again, so the Beis Halevi addresses this. Okay, but leaving the Beis Halevi aside, the Kli Yakar suggests from a simple syntax perspective. Just tell me, Vayelech Yaakov Charana. Yaakov went to Haran, and by definition, again, I might not be a rocket scientist, but I know that if he went to Haran, that he left Be'er Sheva. Why the need to explicitly articulate that he left Be'er Sheva? So look what the Kli Yakar says. This is amazing. Hichricho lomar, shahaya msalik machshavto mikol vakol, mimakom meguras aviv v'imo. So the Kli Yakar says something dramatically amazing. Vayetze Yaakov mi-Be'er Sheva is not a geographic statement. It is an emotional, spiritual statement. Vayelech Yaakov Charana is Yaakov Avinu journeying to Haran. Vayetze Yaakov mi-Be'er Sheva is that Yaakov Avinu left, not just physically, he left emotionally from his parents' home as well. He left everything about his parents' home behind. He left everything about his familial relationship behind. What does this mean? Aki nikra yotze. Lomar lecha sheyotza mikol vakol. The lashon of yotze doesn't just mean to leave. The lashon of yotze means to leave and to leave behind. I left something and I leave every trace of it behind me. Skip down a little bit. Skip down to paragraph Beis. Lefi shematzino sheYaakov ne'enash al osan 22 shana shlokim by mitzvas kibbutz avim v'yishlahakshos halo halach birushus aviv imo u'mitzvosim v'lama ne'enash akol osan yamim afki afki tim salomar. I'm just going to read one and I'll translate. Sharamash amri imo v'yashavti imo yamim achadim mikamakom lama ne'enash akol yamim. So listen to this. So the Kli Yakar says something amazing. We know Yaakov Avinu is away from home for 22 years. Chazal understand that he is punished for those 22 years that he's away from home. How is he punished for those 22 years? Where did the punishment come up? Yosef. Yosef is also distanced or exiled from the family for 22 years. It's not an accident that Yosef is 22 years, Yaakov is 22 years. So Chazal connected that and they say Yosef's exile from the family for 22 years was a punishment for Yaakov Avinu staying away for 22 years. So I don't understand. Why is Yaakov punished for being away from home for 22 years? After all, he was away from home. Why? His parents told him to. Right? So you want to say that his mother only wanted him to be gone for a little while, and he was gone for a longer while. So at most, you could hold him accountable for what? For some amount of time. Okay, so maybe it's, for argument's sake, his mother wanted him to go for 10 years and he was gone for 12 years. Okay, so hold him accountable for 12 years of prolonged absence from the familial home. But why would he be held accountable for the entire 22 years that he did not live at home? Look what the Kli Yakar says. He says something amazing. Ella, I'm in number 11, paragraph Beis, four lines in, right after the comma. Ella, vaday lefisha aviv amar lo, kum lech padana aram, hitir lo leilech, aval lo lotzeis mikol vakol. Because in Yitzchak tells Yaakov to go to Padan Aram. So go means, leich means what? Go physically. But don't emotionally or spiritually leave your family home. He called a holeich v'dayt olachzer oshadayin machshavto mishotetes shama nikra holeich v'lo yotze. Says the Kiyaka something amazing. There's never seen a holeich and a yotze. Holeich means someone who goes, but I'm still tethered to the point of origin. Yotze means what? I go and I sever all ties to the point of origin. V'hula osikein ela v'yetze Yaakov mikol v'kol. Uki'i, listen to these words. Vayetze Yaakov means Yaakov didn't just physically leave the familial home. Vayetze means he severed his emotional ties to the home as well. He severed his emotional ties to the family. V'ki'ilu shachach kol beis aviv v'imo. It's as if he forgot his mother and his father. Alkin ne'enash b'kiyotze bo. That's why, again, according to the Kli Yakar, that's why Yaakov Avinu is punished for the full 22 years, because he didn't just leave. He severed all of his ties. Sheben echam ibanavu Yosef. So skip down a little bit. So according to the Kli Yakar, what's unfolding over here is the following. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva is an indictment of Yaakov Avinu. Is an indictment. Yitzchak told you leich. Yitzchak told you go. Even Rivka said what? Barach lecha, run away. But no one ever told you tsay. No one ever told you leave. But yet you, Yaakov, on your own, severed your ties to your home. You, Yaakov, on your own, cut yourself off from the family. That's vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Yaakov Avinu doesn't just geographically leave, because the geographic statement is covered by vayelech harana. He emotionally leaves. He cognitively leaves. And according to the Kli Yakar, that's why Yaakov Avinu is held accountable for the 22-year absence. Which then leads us to a very obvious question, which is, what happened? So watch this. Fast forward a little bit. So, and the Kli Yakar makes reference to this, but take a look at number 12. What the Kli Yakar tells us is that Yaakov Avinu intentionally forgot about his father's home. He intentionally disassociated. So take a look at number 12. If we fast forward a little bit, so remember again, Yosef was also distanced from his family. Remember again, Yosef is a very different type of context. But Yosef, bless you, Yosef also thinks his family doesn't want him, or whatever the metzias is. Yosef becomes viceroy in Egypt, marries a wonderful woman by the name of Asnas, and they have two sons. Vayikra Yosef es shem habachar Menashe. Yosef names his firstborn son Menashe. Why? Kinashani Elokim es kolam ali ve'es kol beis avi. God has allowed me to forget all of my suffering and all of my father's home. Vish es shem hasheni kara Ephraim. He called the second son Ephraim. Why? Ki Ephrani Elokim be'eretz anyi. For God has made me fruitful. God has made me successful in the land of my affliction. And there's an obvious kasha, there's an obvious problem here. Why? Because if you were to think about the continuum of experiences, which name would you have put first? Normally one would assume that Ephraim comes before Menashe, which actually is quite profound, because that is what happens later on. Ephraim comes before Menashe. In other words, generally, what does Yosef say? Meaning, you know, the dramatic part about biblical names is that they give you a window into the person's life experiences, right? We see this most dramatically with Rachel and Leah, the way they named their children. Because remember again, Rachel and Leah named the kids even from their handmaids. They name all of the children. And each of those names is a window into what that particular mother, what that particular matriarch is experiencing in this moment. So Yosef is no different. So I would have thought that what Yosef would have said was the following. Firstborn son Ephraim. God has allowed me to be successful in my land of affliction. And therefore, again, as a result, the second son is named Menashe. God has allowed me to forget all of my suffering, all of my difficulty in my father's home. Why has God allowed me to forget? Why? Why? Or I should say differently. What has allowed me to forget all of my suffering? The successes. So we normally assume that if a person suffers, so what ultimately, again, like what's the ointment? What's the medicine? What's the balm for suffering? Success. So the more successes, the more smachot I have, so that masks a little bit. That takes the edge off the suffering. So I would have thought, again, go ahead and put Ephraim first, and then Menashe. First the successes, then the forgetfulness. But that's not what Yosef says. Because Yosef teaches us a dramatic lesson. Yosef teaches us that sometimes, if you want to be happy in life, you can't wait for happy things to occur. First, you have to learn how to disassociate from the pain. You can't let the pain define you. You can't let the pain be the be-all and end-all of who and what you are. Yosef said, you want to know why I'm successful? Why am I, Yosef, successful? I'm successful at the end of the day. Ki nashani elokim es kol amali ves kol beis avi. Because at the end of the day, Yosef says, I have chosen to forget. I have chosen to forget. Now, by the way, you understand, we see this already, and we know it's not true. Why is it not true? No one ever forgets their pain, right? The proof to that is, Yosef's a big shot until his brothers walk into the room, and then he starts crying, right? I'm saying, when Yosef says forget, what he doesn't mean is forget. What he means is, I can't allow my pain to define me. I can't allow my family, the catastrophic events of my family. And remember again, for Yosef, they were quite catastrophic. Understand, this is not just being mistreated by brothers. This was literally brothers who you saw the hatred in their eyes. You saw they were ready to kill you. And only as a last result, because of someone's intervention, did they decide to throw you in a pit like a piece of garbage and sell you like a piece of property. The pain and the betrayal and the feelings of the unspeakable feeling. But Yosef says, you know, in life, you have a choice. You could let your pain overtake you. You could let your pain define you. Some people define themselves by their tragedies. Some people define themselves by their setbacks. It becomes the totality. Who am I? Who am I? I'm a person who has been wronged. Who am I? I'm a person who suffers. Who am I? I'm a person who has suffered difficult circumstances. That's how sometimes people define themselves. The problem is, if I define myself by my suffering, then what? There is no room for dynamic growth. If I'm a sufferer, if I'm a victim, if I'm just a person, Nebuch, who's been dealt a terrible hand, if that's who and what I am, then there is no ability to ever move forward. Important to sort in life. People never forget their pain. We never forget our pain. And I want to tell you something. That's a good thing. Because our pain makes us better people. Our pain makes us more sensitive people. Our pain over time becomes our greatest catalyst for growth. So when Yosef says, I forgot. I forgot the pain of my father, my brother, my household. He's lying. He doesn't forget anything. What he is saying is, instead of forgetting is, I've compartmentalized. I have decided that I am not going to define myself by the wrongs perpetrated against me. I'm not going to define myself as Nebuch, the guy who was sold by his brothers. I'll tell you, my grandparents, Zichrona Livracha, were both survivors of the war. And the one thing that drove them crazy more than anything is when people refer to them as survivors. They did not like that term. Because I heard them say this many times. I always felt bad when somebody said it accidentally. I said, oh boy, you don't know what you're in for. Right? But that's why? Because again, my grandparents often said, I accomplished a lot more in my life than survived. Right? They were Hungarian Jews. So, you know, for them, Baruch Hashem, they were spared from most of the war until 1944. My greatest accomplishment is not surviving Gehenna for a year. That's not my greatest accomplishment in life. That is something that, yes, has built me. That is something that has scarred me. That's something that's there. But that's not my claim to fame. That's not my greatest accomplishment, that I stayed alive despite the brutality. My greatest accomplishment is that I restarted my life in a foreign land. My greatest accomplishment is that I built a family of Shorei Torah mitzvos. My greatest accomplishment is that all of my grandchildren and grandchildren are on Shomer Shabbos learning Torah mitzvos. Those are my accomplishments. What happened to me over 1 year of my life has forever changed me and forever changed the trajectory. But that is not my claim to fame. That's not my crown jewel. That's not my greatest life accomplishment. That's what Yosef is saying. My greatest accomplishment is not that I'm a survivor. That's not my greatest accomplishment. I've had a traumatic, tragic experience in life. And it will forever haunt me, and it will forever scar me, and it will forever change the way I look at this world, the way I interact and who I am. Because that's what trauma does. Trauma changes you in an irreversible way. But Yosef says, I will not let it define me. There are things I have to accomplish. And if I allow my pain to define me, because when you allow pain to define you, pain also confines you. You can't grow past it. Because if all I see is pain every single direction that I look, if there's no joy, if there's no simcha, then there is no growth. So everyone thinks that Yosef became happy because he had children, he had wealth, he had fame, and it made up for all the terrible things that happened to him. Not true. Yosef was quote-unquote happy because he made a conscious decision to be happy. Because he made a conscious decision not to forget, but to compartmentalize those traumatic experiences and say, this can't be the totality of my life. This can't be the totality of my existence. There is more to me than surviving a traumatic episode with my brothers. There is more to me than simply surviving a difficult period in life. I have to grow, I have to thrive. Now, I just do want to point out, Yosef also has the added benefit of what? Wealth. Okay, that generally helps with everything. But time. Remember again, Yosef is not saying this, you know, 3 weeks after he was thrown in the pit. When is Yosef saying this? Almost two decades. So sometimes it takes time. This type of Yosef-like perspective of being able to compartmentalize the pain and being able to say, I can't let it define me. I have to be able to see the other things in life as well. I have to be able to see the brachas. I have to be able to see the beauty. That's hard to do in the immediate aftermath of loss. But time, you know, people say time heals all wounds. It's unequivocally a false statement. Time heals no wounds. What time does do is time gives you perspective. Time allows you to see different circumstances in different ways that you could not, in ways you could not in the immediate aftermath of a traumatic event. That's what's happening with Yosef. So I think that's what's happening with Yaakov Avinu as well. Why is it that at the end of the day, you know, Yosef, before I get to Yaakov, Yosef realizes that sometimes in order to be successful in life, you have to let go of the pain of the past. What does it mean to let go of the pain of the past? Not to forget it, but to compartmentalize it. This pain can't define me. This pain can't be the be-all, end-all of my existence. You have to make a decision to be besimcha. You have to believe that it is going to be okay. You know, sometimes the strength of the Jew is you say to yourself over and over, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. And of course, your brain is saying to you, no, it won't. No, it won't. No, it won't. It's not going to be okay. But you have to keep saying it. You have to keep saying it. Because the truth is, it's the MS. It will be okay. Okay doesn't necessarily mean that life is going to go as I planned. Okay doesn't necessarily mean that things are going to go in the mahalach that I had wanted. Okay doesn't mean I'm going to get the life that I want. What okay means is, I will get through this. I will get through this, and I will be successful, and I will find simcha, and I will find happiness, and I will find reasons to rejoice. Right now, it doesn't look okay. And right now, intellectually, I don't see how it's going to be okay. But I believe at the end of the day that it'll be okay. That was the power of Yosef. Kinashani Elokim Eskomo. You want to know how I got here, says Yosef? How is it that I have the strength to lift my head off the pillow? How is it that I have strength to get out of bed every day after everything I've been to? Because through, I believe it's going to be okay. Because this pain will not define me. It's one chilek, it's one piece of my life existence, but I can't allow it to be the totality of who and what I am. I have to make the decision to be besimcha. Now we come back to Yaakov Avinu. Vayetzi Yaakov Beersheva. So why does Yaakov Avinu leave everything behind? And what's the answer? Because Yaakov Avinu has a very traumatic time in his house as well. Do you know what it means to have a brother who wants to kill you? Right? Hopefully not. Hopefully you don't know what that means. Right? And I don't mean just like healthy sibling rivalry. I mean like literally a brother who is ready to kill him. A mother who seems to understand him, but a father who may or may not understand him. There's an incredible amount of pain, an incredible amount of difficulty. And Yaakov Avinu says, you know what, sometimes, if you want to figure it out, if you want to self-actualize, sometimes you have to leave everything and everyone else behind. And you have to go out and try to figure out who and what you are. You see, the Kli Yakar sees Vayetzev Yaakov as an indictment of Yaakov. I don't see it as, not that I'm not arguing on the Kli Yakar, I'm not arguing on the Kli Yakar. I just think that there's a different approach, which is it's not an indictment. It's an accolade of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu could have so easily been scarred. Yaakov Avinu could have so easily given up. Yaakov Avinu could have easily said, you know what, Nebuch, look, my whole home life is dysfunctional. I've got a brother who wants to kill me. What's the point in trying? But he doesn't do that. He says, you know what? I got to strike out on my own. I have to go figure this out on my own. I have to find out who is Yaakov. I did some things I'm not... Remember again, Yaakov was not happy with the whole way he got the Bechor. He wasn't happy with the whole way he got the birthright. That wasn't the way he wanted it. He wanted to get brachos. By the way, he wasn't happy how he got the birthright to begin with from Esav. That wasn't... You think that was pleasant? That wasn't pleasant for Yaakov. And he wasn't happy that he had to fool his father. Yaakov Avinu had to fool his father. You know, the Torah doesn't tell us the narratives in between, but can you imagine that first conversation after Yaakov realizes that he's been duped by Yaakov? Excuse me, after Yitzchak realized that he's been duped by... So again, you know, we love to take like a little Midrash Says approach to the Torah. You know, that of course, Yitzchak realized he was so happy, he gave the bracha to the right son, it's all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's wonderful. These are human beings. These are human beings. And when a father realizes that he has been deceived by his child, and potentially realizes that his own spouse was involved in this intricate web of deception, if you think that that does not create some smidge of shalom bias issues, you're deluding yourself. You're deluding yourself. At the end of the day, again, there are complicated family dynamics that are at play over here. Complicated. And by the way, it's important for us to understand those dynamics, because at the end of the day, if we don't understand those dynamics, then these lessons do not become lessons for us. If now again, we don't know, Torah is not a storybook. So we at the end of the day don't know exactly what their marriage was like, what the shalom bayis was like, what the home was like in the outside. But what's clear is that there's trauma. What's clear is that there's difficulty. And Yaakov, you know, decides, you know what, Vayetze Yaakov, I have to go. I need a brand new start. I need a brand new beginning. If I'm ever going to fully self-actualize, then at the end of the day, I have to disassociate. Was it the right decision? Not the right decision. The Kli Yakar clearly sees it as an indictment. But at the end of the day, sometimes people make the wrong decisions for the right reasons. Sometimes people do things that are incorrect, but the reason they made that bad decision was justifiable in nature. And now we bring this all the way back to this capital. Because I think this is the great lesson that David HaMelech is trying to go ahead and teach us in this capital. What's the theme of this capital? David HaMelech is teaching us about the incredible pain that he experienced with Achitofel. Experienced pain. The pain, but not again, as we said before, not just stam a betrayal, but a betrayal of a Rebbe, right? A betrayal ultimately, again, of someone who he trusted, a betrayal of someone who he loved, the betrayal of someone who was like a father figure. How does David HaMelech begin this capital? How does he begin this capital? What does he say? Lam natseach beneginos. The first thing David HaMelech tells us is, I just want you to know, I'm still singing. I've been hurt. I've been betrayed more than any human being should ever suffer. I've suffered ridiculous setbacks. Again, I've suffered difficulties in my marriage. I've suffered difficulties with my children. I've suffered the loss of a child. I've suffered sickness. I've suffered everything. I just want you to know, Lam natseach beneginos maskila David. The most important lesson in life, keep singing. The most important lesson in life is don't yield. The most important lesson in life is don't give up in the face of your suffering. The most important lesson in life is even when times are difficult to believe, life will be good. I will once again find happiness. It might not be the happiness I thought I would have. It might not be the happiness I had hoped I would have. But lam natseach beneginos maskeda. Before David HaMelech says one word about the betrayal, how does he set the table? Still singing. So I'll let you know, all is good. I'm okay. I'm going to tell you about this betrayal because there are lessons to be learned. I'm going to tell you about my pain because we're going to use it as a catalyst for growth. I'm going to tell you about this horrendous setback because I feel it has made me into a stronger person. But lest you think that I will define myself by this betrayal, lest you think that I will define myself by this backstabbing, lest you think that I will define myself by this pain, lam natseach beneginos maskil ledavid. The greatest lesson David HaMelech teaches us in this capital is even before we get into the Pesukim. The greatest lesson, again, is contained in the very first Pasuk. I will learn from these experiences, but I will never allow them to break me. I will learn from these experiences, and yes, when I recall them, I feel pain from these experiences, but just to let you know, I am still singing. Just to let you know, I am still besimcha. Just to let you know, I still believe that life can and in Yiratz Hashem will be good. And by the way, we saw this thing dramatically earlier. Take a look at number 13. With this, I'll end. L'man yizamercha kavod v'lo yidom. What does Davar HaMelech say? This is even a more dramatic manifestation of this. Davar HaMelech says, Ribono Shel Olam, I will continue to sing your praises and I will not be silent. What does he mean, I will not be silent? Remember again, we spoke about this kapitel about 4 years ago. I'm sure you remember it. Right? So remember again, Lo Yidom reminds us of what? Vayidom Aaron. Aaron, when he suffers the loss, the catastrophic loss of his two sons, Nadav and Avihu, Vayidom, he's silent. He's silent. And again, that was incredible. Aaron didn't complain. Aaron didn't question. Aaron says, I'm going to do something even better than Aaron Cohen. Aaron was silent. Ribono Shel Olam, I won't be silenced. L'man yizamercha kavod v'lo yidom. Ribono Shel Olam, one thing I'm going to be clear. No matter how much pain and suffering I have, I will not be silenced. I will not be sidelined. I believe that there is simcha in my future. I believe that I will be okay. I believe that life will be good. Maybe not the good I thought it would be. Maybe not the good I wanted it to be. Maybe not the good I intended it to be. But I believe ultimately, again, it will be good. This is the power of the lesson of Davar HaMelech. Lam Natzeach B'Neginos Maskil Adavid. The greatest maskil, the greatest lesson, the greatest piece of incredible life information, cathartic life that Davar HaMelech is giving us, is that we all suffer. We all have difficulties. We all have tragedies. We all have setbacks. Some of us greater than others. Some of us more intense than others. Some of us more than others. But at the end of Davar HaMelech says, whatever you're experiencing, Davar HaMelech says, I've experienced it also. And I just want to tell you, keep singing. I just want to tell you, I'm still here, and I'm still singing. I'm still here, I'm still standing, and I still believe that life is going to be good, that there is simcha in my future, that there is beautiful, beautiful, incredible happiness, blessing that is waiting for me. That's the maskil. That's the maskil. That sometimes we have to make the decision first to not allow our pain to define us, to not allow our catastrophic circumstances to define us, to recognize that even when life is difficult, there is still beautiful simcha that awaits us. That's the belief we have to have, and that's the belief that allows us to continue singing even in the face of difficult times. All right, stop over here. That was